manifesting with the conscious mind, healing, teaching, ascending, as a way shower, deliverer, healing servant, as according to the open heart, the enlivened body, the fully activated brain, as according to pathless purpose, enlightenment, and with the idea that we are the voice communicating for God, or the universe, or divinity, it is you, or the creator, the father, that kind of stuff. So it makes it pretty interesting. Anyway, for the first time since I have gotten back into doing Blog Talk Radio, I actually had somebody call into the show before me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring this person on to see what he or she has to say. So just give me a second here. Let's see if it works. Hi, 917, you are live on Welcome to My Point of View. Could you state your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, my name is Tina. I'm calling from New Jersey.
Oh, cool. So how's life in New Jersey at this time of the year?
It's okay. It's not as bad as it has been in the past. I'm almost catching a cold, but there's no snow.
No snow yet. Now, you, what are the winters like where you live? Are they pretty severe? Are they pretty mild? Or is it like a cross between severe and mild?
No, they're pretty mild. It used to snow starting like in October, but even when it does snow, we have a couple of inches. We like it, you know. Thank God for the four seasons. We just endure it.
That's
just,
right.
And just look forward to the next season.
That's exactly right. That's I've lived in Livingston, Montana. There was snow and cold. I lived in Taos, New Mexico. Snow and cold in the winter. And Mount Shasta is snow and cold. And I like snow and cold. I also like hot and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah,
makes it pretty
interesting
and makes it pretty fun. Yeah.
So
what is on your mind?
Oh, I didn't know if you were doing readings. I did see the topic of the show, so if you wanted to discuss that, we can discuss that also. I just didn't know.
Well, we can discuss that, and you can ask me a question. And I don't do typical readings as a rule, psychic readings, but I have a certain degree of clarity of insight and a certain degree of understanding and wisdom, and I can usually give information that proves to be as useful as what's ahead or what's in the store and that kind of stuff.
Oh,
so what would
okay.
you like
so,
to discuss? What's on your mind? What's the question that you'd like to ask?
Oh, I just wanted to ask about my amazing boyfriend and just what did he have planned for us for, like, the holidays or, you know, for us in general.
Could you repeat that? Because it didn't come across real clear.
Oh, I wanted to ask about my amazing boyfriend, Sean, and what does he have planned for us with the holidays and things coming up?
Okay, well, I'm going to turn it around just a little bit. What would you like to have happen for the holidays? What would really float your boat, or what would really make you smile or want to give him a big hug and a kiss?
Well, when we first started dating, we've only been dating for 7 months. He was moving really fast, and he wanted us to move in together, talked about marriage and having a child. And I slowed him down. So we've, you know, been going at a moderate pace now. So, you know, things are really good.
And that's a good thing, and that's a wise thing on your part, I said, because there is the tendency when things move too fast that they come to a fairly abrupt end in a very short period of time. There is that element. So it's kind of one of the things that I have found when it comes to relationships is that it's good to have an idea of what you would like out of the relationship and then see what you can do to work towards that, because relationships, when they first start out, are kind of hit and miss because you're familiarizing yourself with what works, what doesn't work, what do you like, what do you not like, and that kind of stuff. Where is he at? Where are you at? What are some of the things that aren't acceptable, so to speak? Is he a smoker? Is he a drinker? Those kinds of things. And so it's kind of like a work in progress that you kind of have to navigate or negotiate in order to see how it's going to work in the long term.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like from your perspective, as you're getting to feel him out and as he's feeling you out, you kind of make up your mind. I said, this will work. This is something that we need to discuss. This is something that we need to work on, and that type of thing.
Absolutely. That's 100%. I agree.
Right, and then there are the things that, what does he do or what does he say that upsets you? What does he do and say that annoys you? And the same thing, what are things that you say and do that annoy him, because that he can't get away from it. It's almost like half the relationship is good stuff and half the relationship is kind of annoying and that type of stuff. And it's just human nature. We all have our little quirks. We all have our likes and dislikes. And a lot of times there's a certain degree of acceptance and tolerance that has to take place in order for us to simply get along with the person that we're involved with.
Yes.
And at times it's not easy.
Yes,
that's
true.
Thing, you know, the test is when something comes up that upsets us or annoys us or makes us question what is going on. And a lot of times there are the little deceptions that take place, and then there's the little games that tend to take place and so on. And so sometimes relationships aren't real easy because of those factors.
That's true.
So another question is that do you see this as something that's going to last long-term? Do you feel like in another 5 months to, say, 5 months to a year, maybe a year and a half, do you feel like you'll be ready for maybe settling down, having a baby, getting married, and that type of thing?
Yes.
Because one of the things that comes up in the context of a relationship are both partners committed to being responsible financially, meaning are both partners going to have a job? Are both partners going to contribute kind of in an equal manner within the context of the involvement in the relationship? Because a lot of times what happens is that one person has a job and then the other person decides that they're just going to watch TV and maybe drink, maybe smoke, and that type of thing. And then that ends up being a kind of an aggravation to the person who is basically taking responsibility for paying the rent, paying the bills, and so on.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So what do you, I mean, what would you like to do? You know, the question that you asked earlier was what do you, you were wondering about the holidays. Do you have aspirations of going to your family, going to his family? When I was married, my wife and I would go to San Jose, San Mateo, Daly City, San Francisco, because we had four different families to visit on Christmas Day. We would go to her father's, who lived in San Jose. We would go to her mother, who lived in Daly City. We would go to my mom, who at that time lived in San Mateo. And then there were friends and that type of thing. And so do you have kind of an idea of what would you like to do in the context of the holidays? And have you said anything to him to let him know what you would like to do?
No, I haven't said anything. We're going to go visit our family. He works a lot, so I'll be happy for this downtime. But I just want him to know, you know, I do feel a little more comfortable with us moving in. He was just moving. He's a leader, so he just took charge and, you know, what he wanted in the beginning. But, yeah, we've been moving slow, so I think it's going to be good. I just was trying to see what Sarah picked up. But everything you said was 100%.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, well, the other thing is that have you ever lived with someone who is a boyfriend? Has that ever been? Because one of the things that happens is when people move together, all of a sudden their space is now shared, and the other person, as a rule, is always there. And so a person has to, one of the things that I find is useful is that there has to be, It's kind of like there was a book that I read about 35 years ago called Intimacy and Solitude, and women tend to be more social by nature and or intimate by nature, and men tend to be more solitary by nature. And so one of the things that comes up is that how and what's the space that's available to just be by yourself on your own without having somebody around all the time, because it's not real easy at times when people are involved and living together for the circumstance or the condition to be what it is when two people or more people are involved.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because a lot of times people don't take the time to set boundaries of saying, okay, well, I need boundaries in this area, I need boundaries in this area, I need boundaries in this area, and that type of thing. And it's like anything, you know, as we're involved in the context of our life, when it involves others, there's a give and take within the context of the process.
Yes.
And a lot of times, if an individual has a spiritual practice, the interesting thing, if an individual is a spouse, is a parent, and is an employee, oftentimes it doesn't allow for any personal time at all. And spirituality is more a personal thing than it is anything else.
Yeah.
Spirituality. And as the title of the show talked about is that spirituality is the life of, as it pertains to the uniqueness factor of an individual. And when an individual is involved as an employee, a parent, and a relationship of intimacy, a lot of times the spiritual practice takes a back seat. And a lot of times, sometimes the spiritual practice basically gets left behind in the process, because there's always this attention to the spouse, to the children, and so a fine line is there between how does an individual take time for himself or herself, and then allow for the process of being involved with people, places, and things that are a complement to the spiritual practice. Because I'm of the opinion that it begins and ends with a spiritual practice, and it's more important than anything else, because
Yeah.
things tend to work better from the standpoint of spirituality, because spirituality is simply the life of, according to the individual, according to what they feel, sense, think, and envision as the life that they're living within the context of a shared circumstance or condition.
That's
Which
true.
is what you're in. And so one of the suggestions that I would make is have be real, real clear on what you want in the context of the relationship, and then just pay attention to how are your aspirations being met in the context of the relationship by the person that you're involved with.
Yes.
And take note of things. Take note of things that he says, take note of things that he does that you feel are disrespectful to you as a woman within the
Yeah.
context of your relationship to him, because a lot of times men aren't really mindful about where a woman is at within the context of her sense of being and livelihood. And so a lot of times there are insensitivities that come up simply because a man doesn't take into consideration, one, his feminine side, and two, what that feminine side is represented as a woman that he's
Yes.
involved with. Now, does that make
Yes.
sense?
Yes.
And so one of the things that you have an opportunity of doing is you have an opportunity of really being clear on what do you want him to bring to the table. And it doesn't have to necessarily be money, and it doesn't necessarily have to be overly attentive to you. What it does have to do is he honoring and respecting you as the person that you are within the context of your likes, dislikes, and so on.
Yeah.
And then there are those things that you like to do. There are those things that he likes to do. He might be a sports fan, and you might be someone that's interested in something, another art form, like you might be into music, or you might be
yeah.
into art, or you might be into dance, and he might be into basketball and football and those types of things.
That's true.
Yeah. And so it's like anything else. It's always a work in progress. That's the kind of thing that makes relationships interesting and makes relationships fun, is that it's a work in progress, and you kind of get to open up to each other, and you get to decide what you like.
Yeah.
And there's what you feel. There's what you think. There's the psychological. There's the spiritual. There might even be the religious. There might be the political. There's the education background that might be there, and so on. There's the work that you do. There's the work that he does. There's just the interest that you have, and so on. And then there's also the sexual. Are you sexually compatible? Does he like the same things that you do? Are there things that he wants that you're unwilling to do? Is there things that he wants that you're unwilling to do, and so on? And that's also a work in progress, and there's a real fine line.
That's true.
Yeah, and so it's like a lot of times, you know, it's a lot of times people don't do a good job of making up their mind. Are you familiar with vision boards at all?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I am.
Are you familiar with vision boards?
Yes, I am.
Do you have one or two or three or 50 or 1,000 or a million that you use?
I have one, but I haven't.
What?
I haven't updated it in a while.
Right, because that's one of the things that's useful, is to kind of have an idea of where you would like your life to evolve into. And he probably has the things that he's interested in as well. Now, is he older than you or younger than you?
He's a year younger.
Uh-huh. Okay. That you know, that makes it a good dynamic. Because oftentimes age does play a role, because more mature people or older people, you know, I've been involved with, I had a relationship once with a lady that was a year older than me, and then I've had a few relationships where the women have been 10 years older, and I dated an African-American lady in Rome, Georgia, and she was 23 years older than me.
Oh.
Which is pretty interesting. But she didn't look it. She looked like she was in her 60s, but she was actually in her 70s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it was in the South, so it made it a pretty interesting dynamic. Because
yeah.
There are certain elements within the context of the South that frown on basically interracial coupling and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I went to an all-black church and played music, and I met her at the church. And we dated for 3 years before I moved from Rome, Georgia to Taos, New Mexico.
Yeah.
And it was a very interesting relationship, because there was a cultural difference that I had to become familiar with, because I would say things without realizing that it was offensive to her.
Yeah.
And so I had to be mindful of that fact, and it was a nice relationship. I liked it. I like chocolate. And it just makes it interesting, you know, when you bring in. To me, it's really interesting when you bring in different cultural backgrounds into the mix.
Yeah.
Because it's just like spice with food. It makes it interesting, and it can be challenging. And you have to pay attention. You know, you have to pay attention to where the person is at. And it was nice. I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. So what would you like to do for over the holidays? I mean, what do you have any ideas of what you'd like to do?
I really wish we could take a vacation, but we, you know, because of the kids, we can't go too far. But that would be very
right.
nice.
Now, how many children do you have?
Two.
Now, are they yours or his or both?
He has three children.
Okay, so he has three that he's bringing to the table, and you have two that you bring to the table, right?
Yes.
So you both come from the perspective of being parents,
Yes.
which is cool. Yeah. And that brings up a real interesting dynamic. And how old are your children?
My daughter is, I have a 16-year-old and an 11-year-old, and he has children, they're 15, 14, and 12, so our children
Oh,
are
okay.
big.
So they're all basically in the same, they're all basically, and they're all teenagers, basically, with the
Yeah.
exception of the 11-year-old.
Yeah.
So it basically works fairly well when you all get together with all the kids. And five children, that's a lot. That's a lot of
Yeah.
children. Yeah, but it's,
That
but you know, but the thing is that, it's, I've never had children because I always seem to get involved with women that can't get pregnant. So it's an
Oh.
interesting thing when you have, when I was living in Taos, New Mexico, I lived next door to a couple, Tony and Ika, and they had three boys, and then they gave birth to a fourth boy,
Yeah.
March 7th of 2012, I believe. Yeah,
Okay.
2012. And actually, no, it was 2011 because the child was a year old when I moved, and I moved in March of 2012.
Yeah.
And that was kind of interesting, you know. And so, do you have any idea of what the children see? See, the interesting thing is that this is the interesting thing about the holidays. You have five kids, you have them, and everybody probably wants to do something different.
Yes.
And so there's almost like there has to be a consensus about who's going to do what to make it
Yes.
work for everybody that's involved with the holidays. You
Yes.
know, because that's the thing is it's almost like you have to sit out and you have to do a consensus. It's almost like you have to do a consensus of who wants to do what and is it
Yes.
feasible to do what everybody wants to do because the
Yeah.
kids might want to go to Disneyland and there might not be the funds available to do that.
Yeah.
It seems like in this day
Absolutely.
and age. Yeah, it seems like in this day and age there always has to be a budget involved.
Yes.
A budget within the context of the cash flow.
Yeah.
Unless everybody's making really good money.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. 'Cause I know that that it's not easy, you know, it's in this day and age it seems like it's difficult to pay the You look at your food budget, just, you look at the food budget and that kind of stuff, and that's a lot of money. That's usually about $400 or $500 a month just to buy food, so everybody can enjoy what it is that they want to eat and that kind of thing. So, what, you both live in New Jersey, right? Well, we lost the caller, so I guess I'll get on with the I guess I'll continue with the show. One of the things that people don't realize is that if they don't have a unique spiritual practice that differs from anyone else, more than likely what will happen is that the individual will simply have the experience of birth, crucifixion, death, reincarnation. Death of the body is reincarnation of the soul. They're the same experience from the perspective of the individual. So it becomes a curious thing. It becomes an interesting thing when we look at how we're living our life within the context. And I know for a fact that my spirituality, as far as my spiritual practice, differs from anyone else's. I meditate in a double pyramid, and I meditate in a quadruple pyramid. It means four freestanding pyramids within the context of my life and times. One of the things that's essential about spirituality is that spirituality isn't means that which is the life of or that which brings to life a given life form, and it is the spirit that an individual or a species is living, not the body. The body can be thought of as a projected objectification of the mind that the spirit brings to life that the soul becomes conscious of. So if an individual wants to have a viable spirituality that is self-sustaining, self-regenerative, and self-perpetuating, it's useful to understand what the spirit is. And it's an individual process to understand what that is within the context of a person's life at times. One of the things that I find useful is to understand what the nature of the self is according to the design, which is basically mind, body, spirit, soul. Having to do with God, Yahweh, in the universe, it can be thought of as will of light and consciousness, or that which is infinite, eternal, complete, total, as is. Spirituality is something that, from the perspective of the individual, allows the individual to have a life that works within the context of the individual so that it doesn't cease to exist, because the culmination is the individual has a spirituality, the death experience ceases to exist. In 1850, there was the New Dispensation with Madame Blavatsky, and there was the Industrial Revolution beginning in 1850, and the idea was simply this: science and technology lacking a viable spirituality will self-destruct over time. The death experience is that process. It means the self-destruction of the self because the spiritual practice is lacking. And so it becomes an interesting process when we are looking at our life and the type of life that we're living, because when we are dealing specifically with spirituality as the life of, what happens is that we have to realize that the physical is kind of a holograph, and then the spirit brings it to life, so animates it so that it can exist in a given way, shape, and form according to its ideal. And every species on the planet does that. Every species is an aspect of that. So it becomes interesting when we look at the surface of the planet, that almost everybody on the surface of this planet practices a type of religion. Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam account for approximately 4.5 billion people. And then there are derivatives of that that probably account for another. I would offer the argument that approximately 6 to 6.5 billion people are religious rather than spiritually minded. And the great oxymoron is when two or more people are practicing the same systems theory as an ideology like Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, or Islam. It means that they are not being true to their own spirituality, and the simple fact of the matter is that lacking a viable spirituality will culminate in the death experience. And the other flip side is that an individual has the option of being conscious so that they can ascend, taking the body with when they go. And most people don't pay attention to that detail. Humanity basically has one responsibility, or individuals composing humanity, and that is knowing the self according to its design, serving others, and collective ascension. Madame Blavatsky began the New Dispensation about it's the spirituality that prevents self-destruction of a person as the death experience, humanity as a form of genocide, or the destruction of the planet. Asteroids that are in space are the direct result of science and technology lacking a spirituality that has destroyed the planet by blowing it up. And we have the technology to do that. Hydrogen bombs are about 50 times more powerful than a nuclear weapon, and if someone were to take a hydrogen bomb and test it in the surfaces of the planet, it would literally blow the planet to bits. And this is something that people don't realize. A continuation from Madame Blavatsky was Mayer Becquerel. And Mayer Becquerel created Christian Science in 1866. She wrote the Science, and her basic message was life is spiritual, not physical. The physical matter is mortal error. It's the spirit that is the life of nothing else. And so one of the things that an individual works on within the context of self-discipline and self-development is, can an individual become conscious of who they are within the context of the process as what the spirituality is that lends itself to the uniqueness as the nature of who a person is in a given moment. One of the nice things is that as an individual develops within the context of his or her spirituality, there's a natural outgrowth that takes place so that one gets to the point of making a contribution to others. One of the arenas that's useful is understanding what the process is so that an individual's life will work accordingly. One of the things that a person begins to realize is that every single life form on the surface of this planet lives by the same spirituality. It is the same spirit that brings to life a given species, whether it's a fish, a bird, a tree, a reptile, a bug, like a beetle. It's all the same spirituality, which means that when an individual is truly spiritually minded, it will lend itself to everything else. Everyone else. And this is something that's not real easy from the perspective of people as they are living on this planet, because if an individual doesn't resolve fear as a predominant, only fear dies. Love only ascends when it is owned as the physical representation of an individual. One of the things that's useful is it begins and ends with meditation, according to Edgar Cayce. I have been meditating for about 40 years, and I find that the more I meditate, the more conscious I get. The more I meditate, the more useful my life becomes within the context of who I am as it pertains to the realness of as a point of ongoingness. One of the things that becomes useful is that as an individual works within the context of the nature of the self according to the design, what happens is an individual then understands what the role God is, what the role Yahweh is as the creator, the role it is as that which brought us to life. And there's also conscious awareness of all it is, which is the nature of the soul. The soul is to consciousness what will is to creativity, what love and light are is the representation of what is created, and everything in existence is a representation of the will of God, the love of the Creator, the light of that which brought it to life within the context of the ensoulment that is conscious of itself as what it has incarnated into, and the soul literally incarnates into every species, so it is conscious of itself as the species that it is within. One of the things that an individual could do is aspire to do conscious out-of-body experiences, which allows the soul to be disencumbered by the body. Another is to attune to the mind so that God can be known, because in one sense, the one thing that spirituality does is it allows an individual to understand what God, life, Christ, serving others, according to oneness that heals wholeness and ascension, because all you have is the oneness of God, the healing of life, the wholeness of the Christ, and the ascension of that which serves. One of the interesting things about ascension is there's individual ascension and collective ascension, and at one point in the creation, according to the raw material, the last state where individuality is possible is the third octave of sixth density, because according to the raw, the fourth octave of sixth density is a reunification of light to love, love light. And so the only thing that you have from the fourth octave of sixth density through all of seventh density are collectives that have ascended. And what happens is that the last thing that happens within the context of a state of consciousness is that it reintegrates into the original state and condition of God that surrounds the universe. In order to understand the universe, it's important to understand the nature and role of the soul. It's useful to understand infinity. Infinity means variable and variety of that which remains constant. God is the constancy. another thing that's useful is to understand the role that fear plays and the role that love plays, because fear is to the demise of or that which ends a given state, condition, circumstance, opportunity, if you will. Love is a creative agency through the will of God that through the process of light as a vision allows an individual to create consciously a representation of what mind, body, spirit are as they corresponds to a larger horizon. And the simple trick is this, there is always a larger horizon. One of the difficulties within the context of the process, one of the difficulties within it is not understanding the wisdom that's involved from a point of love that accepts and light that is even-minded about a given state, condition, circumstance, existence of, and so on. One of the bodies of knowledge that I find very useful to participate with is A Course in Miracles. I read Lesson 273 every day, which is The Stillness of the Peace of God is Mind. But I have added a whole bunch of information to it, so it's much more comprehensive. One way of understanding the nature of the self is presence, isness, realness, pattern, content, truth, I amness, allness, Godhood. Another is stillness, joy, peace, freedom, adventure, joy, love, compassion, harmony. Another is oneness, perfection, completeness, content that contributes, comprehensiveness, unity, union, connected integration, reintegration. So one of the things that we find within the composition or constitution of the self as it corresponds to spirituality is the life of as we are willing to feel, sense, think, and vision who we are as the life of that the spirit brings to life. The interesting thing about spirituality is it will bring to life both positive and negative energy so that an individual can decide which aspect to polarize. There are those who polarize on the negative according to self-service. There are those who polarize on the positive as that which serves others. The only thing that evolves humanly is service polarization. It is the only thing that's harvestable. The harvesting of souls that is going to take place within the next 5 years only involves those who are serving themselves, those who are serving others. Those who are serving themselves are removed, taken to that aspect of the universe that corresponds to their negativity, which is an emphasis upon hierarchy, elitism, superiority, chosenness, good versus evil, war, greed, class distinction under the blanket protocols of conquering, enslaving, and destroying. Those who serve others live according to equality, balance, relationship, purpose, harmony, peace, serenity, tranquility, and then everybody else comes from an arbitrary point of view. And there's nothing inappropriate or wrong given one's measure of the world. That's from Conversations with God. In Conversations with God, it says nothing is inappropriate given one's measure of the world. So it becomes a very interesting thing when we are observing the lives of others to have acceptance and even-mindedness, because if we don't, it gets in the way of our spiritual discipline and development. And a viable spirituality always and only lends itself to all else. It lends itself to the various life forms. It lends itself to the planet. It lends itself to the universe. It lends itself to people, places, and things. In one sense, that's what spirituality, it's difference that allows for commonality, common bonding, allows for conduciveness within the context of divergency or difference. So it becomes an interesting process when we are looking at spirituality as a practice, is doesn't lend itself to the life of doesn't lend itself to the life of who we are within the context or composition of who we are within the context of what's going on. And oftentimes, no, it doesn't. And when we look at the world today with all of the nonsense that's going on, we have to ask ourselves, why is that circumstance or condition? And a lot of it has to do with simple belief systems. And it's curious that it's that way. And yet that is how it is. If we look at the protocols of the invader culture mindset with its emphasis on war, greed, and class distinction, what we find is there's science, religion, education, business, politics, law, and medicine that don't really lend themselves to the human ideal in a wholesome manner. And in fact, I would offer the argument that those seven institutions or traditions are antithetical to the human ideal as it was created and brought to life 75,000 years ago. And I have a suspicion that before we begin to evolve into collective ascension, those seven traditions will have to cease to exist. According to Conversations with God, Neil Donald Walsh writes that humanity will not evolve as long as there is nation state. I offer the argument that as long as there is gender disparity, nation state, competition, conflict, war, greed, and the things that compose a society, humanity will not evolve, because the fact is that we have not evolved in 10,000 years, because we are faced with the same circumstances and conditions now that we were faced with then. So the question we have to ask ourselves is that why is it we are so unwilling to let go of ideas that are harmful, detrimental, and flat out erroneous? It's kind of a curiosity, because in one sense, all we do is we have desire, we have experience, and then we ponder the experience. Buddhists will say that the only thing that matters is the cessation of the desire, and working within the context of conscious awareness from a place of isolation exclusionism by living in a monastery, or in the case of India, an ashram. And to me, it's kind of the oxymoron is when an individual is living in a monastery trying to educate people how to conduct their affairs when they are living in a city or a town. And it doesn't make sense to me that people that have removed themselves or isolated themselves from the entire human process of interaction between peoples is saying A, B, C, D, E, F, G, because it might work for them within the context, but it's not letting itself within the context of an individual who's living the life that they are. So it becomes an interesting process about who we are, why we're here, where we're going, and so on. What I find useful is coming to a point in my life in which the ideas that I have make sense and lend themselves to others. And that is the curious thing. It's also a curious thing when there's a religious, it's like read the Old Testament, and does any of it make sense beyond fear, judgment, persecution? Then you look at the life of Jesus, love, forgiveness, doing unto others, and then you look at the arbitrariness of Paul, who was misguided and mistaken in most of the stuff that he decided was Christian faith. It is a curious process when we are looking at our individuality and kind of the oxymoronic ways that we choose to live by trying to fit into the systems theories that are there, the psychologies and philosophies and attitudes of mom and dad and so on. Oftentimes, ideas don't work very well, and yet we insist on taking the idea as self to the grave. Death is the great myth. Sin, sickness, disease, and death are the great myths. Birth, crucifixion, death, reincarnation are the great myths. And yes, there is reincarnation, but only when the body dies. The thing that I was shown when I was 5 years old was that I would live to be longer. I was shown that I would live to be hundreds of years old, and I was shown that I would take the body with me when I go. In 1982, I was given a reading by a psychic friend who said, you will live longer than they think is humanly possible, and you will take this body with you when you go. You are the only person that I have read where I saw don't see the death experience. As I understand it now, I will live to be approximately 970 years old, and I will take my body with me when I go, because I've already had the experience of my life as God consciousness, enlightenment, miracle-mindedness, universal conscious awareness as the nature of who I am, which I will assist others in being the consciousness of as who and what they are. When we are looking at the process, part of the process is resolving issues, part of it is developing talents, part of it is conscious awareness. One of the things that is useful is meditation. In my case, written and read books, vision boards, because it assists me on what I want my life to be pretty much across the board. One of the things that I like is the idea of comprehensiveness, because I try not to leave any details unattended. it is a curious thing when we are looking at the life that we're living within the context of our spirituality or lack thereof, that if we don't take enough into consideration, the only thing that happens is the death experience, which is the disparity between that which is real, true, conducive, ongoing, and that which is false doctrine that the individual is willing to die for, just to be right in most cases. There are 11 aspects that an individual has to resolve: lack, need, want, wound, fear, guilt, arrogance, denial, ignorance, indifference, and intolerance. This is what we are up against within the constitutional composition of the nature of our life as who we are. And so it becomes a curious thing. The reason why it becomes a curious thing is that people don't walk away from mom and dad. They don't walk away from religion. They don't walk away from science. They don't walk away from education, business, politics, law, medicine, and so on. Science exists for the sole purpose of denying the existence of God, denying the reality of the soul, denying spirituality as a process of involvement, and denying the fact that there are extraterrestrials. It also denies the fact that everything that exists is created and brought to life by two differing agencies. It's why in the Old Testament it says, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, male and female created he them." There is a plural there, which means that more than one is evolved. The oxymoron or the irony is that in the Old Testament you have the Lord God Jehovah, which is supposedly the one true God that's not a creator, not a bestower, does not bring to life, and only conquers and slaves and destroys. Shiva is a destroyer God. Jehovah is a destroyer God. And as long as people worship a destroyer God in any context or capacity, war, greed, and class distinction will be enforced on this planet. And there's very, very possible there's an interesting process within the context of our life when it comes to protocols that we're involved with. And so it becomes interesting when we are trying to get on with the task at hand of simply going about paying attention to the details of who we are, what we want to be involved with, and so on. Spirituality only makes sense when it's an approach from an individual uniqueness and no other criteria. Religion misses the point entirely. Just as science denies the existence of God, life, spirituality, universality, the soul, extraterrestrials, and so on, religion teaches false doctrine about God. Because the simple fact of the matter is God is an inner state, a state of consciousness. And ideals of God that people worship is nothing but a graven image. And more often than not, the images that are worshipped by people in the context of religion basically don't exist in the first place. One of the things that everybody has an opportunity of doing is manifesting with a conscious mind, working within the context of enlightenment, working within the context of stillness, peace, and harmony. Another area is, can we simply have a life in which we feel comfortable, in which there's equality, balance, relationship, purpose, and harmony within the context of our life as who we are and what's involved? And then it just kind of goes from there. Anyway, I am the host, Douglas H. Malloy, and this is Welcome to My Point of View. And one of the things that I'm going to do is that I am going to, in a couple of minutes, I think I'm going to play another song to end the show. And so anyway, the trick is just to go easy on yourself. Feel inspired. Like who you are as the reality of within the context of the life that you're living. And it's really, really cool. I would recommend understanding things like God's will to be and know extends and expands by inversely reversing into a focus, becoming conscious of that which gave rise to it. My one philosophy is feel something real, think something true, share it in ways that are kind and conducive. Another is to work on being positive by letting go of the negative. One useful exercise is to take sea salt, put it in a couple of bowls, put your hands in it, and ask this negativity absorbed and grounded in the body in stipulated time. It can be 24 hours, it can be 24 days, it can be 24 lifetimes, it can be 24 millennia. Ask for the negativity absorbed and grounded in the body, which it does every 24 hours. It absorbs and grounds the negative or positive energy from the environment or any place that the virgin is. Ask it to dissipate, dissolve, ground, and the salt. I started doing that in 1984, and I've only been sick once in 31 years, which is pretty interesting. So one of the nice things is that when an individual gets to a point to where they work within the context of being positive, it means every experience within the context of the life of the individual is positive as well. Anyway, thanks for listening, and here's a tune for you.
ዋጋ ሊኖራቸው የሚችለው በሥራ ትርጉም እንዲገለጹ በማድረግ ተከብረውና ተጠብቀው ሲገኙ ብቻ ነው። ወይስ ይህንን ቃል ኪዳን እንዲያስከብሩና እንዲያስፈጽሙ የተፈረደባቸው ደካሞችና ትንንሾች መንግስታት ናቸው?
Frustration, oh yes.
That's it.